Welcome back, folks. Good to have you with us here on the Mark Steiner Show. And we're going to jump back into a conversation here with Bob Cherry, who is a former president of FOP. But before we do that, I want to remind you that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, has been helping its members and its community prosper for the last 80 years. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. Belongs to you. Money comes back in the end. More information at www.mecu.com or at steinershow.org is MeQ, Baltimore Credit Union's banner. In the house now is Robert Cherry. Bob Cherry has been used to be a guest on the show a lot. He's a former president of the Baltimore's Fraternal Order of Police. He's now a national trustee with the Fraternal Order of the Police and is back on active duty as a sergeant in the Baltimore City Police Department on patrol in uniform wearing his blues. Is it blue or black?
It's blue.
It's blue.
It depends on what day, I guess. It may look black, but no, it's blue.
410-319-8888 is the number here to join us for this conversation. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner or you can send us an email to talk@steinershow.org. But do join in. Bob will be here for the rest of the show, and we want to get as many questions as you can in. There's clearly has been a lot of controversy around this, and I appreciate you giving me the text and saying, hey, let's talk. So good to have you back.
Yeah, it's good to have you. See you, Mark, and Happy New Year to all your listeners. I'm glad to be back.
So let's get down to brass tacks. Clearly there's been so much controversy around the police department in the city and across the country. With the consent decree, and we don't know where the consent decree is going to go, what it'll mean. It's in the courts now. The federal court is overseeing it now. A monitor will be appointed. There's a federal judge on top of it, which means it goes ahead despite who's president of the United States at this moment. So, and your organization, the Fraternal Order, which you're still part of, right?
That's correct.
Doesn't like this decree.
No, I don't think that's fair to say, Mark.
What is fair to say?
I think this is what Vanita Gupta, who is the former head of the Civil Rights Division, would tell you, is that Ms. Gupta and her staff did meet with the FOP prior to negotiating.
Were you part of that meeting?
The city. I was in a few of those meetings, yes. And over the last year, the attorneys from DOJ who were riding with our offices had an opportunity to meet with not only the FOP leadership, but the offices on the street. And prior to the negotiations between the city and DOJ, the FOP did submit, I think it was like an 18-page written report on recommendations that we thought would be important to include in the consent decree. Now, obviously, we may disagree on whether a consent decree is actually necessary, given, you know, I think what the Baltimore City Police Department has accomplished over the last few years. I think there's a story.
Let me stop there. Let me just pick up on that point. What do you mean that may not be needed?
Well, a lot of the things that are in the consent decree are actually already occurring in the BPD. And I know, you know, Commissioner Davis and prior to him, Commissioner Biefeld and the others would say that they took these steps to avoid a consent decree. And what I'm talking about is, you know, and I know this firsthand. I've been back on the street, as you said, prior to going on the show for the last two and a half years. Being in uniform as a supervisor on the front line with these officers, there is an incredible change from what it was like when I first joined 20-something years ago. And there's a lot of reporting going on where our officers are being held accountable in a way that's never been done before. And this is all before the consent decree. So I think when you look at the numbers in the Baltimore City Police Department, 13 years ago, we had over 100,000 arrests. Last year, we had 23,000. Last year, we've already reduced taser use by 50%. Our use of force complaints are down, and yet crime is up. So I think what the FOP is trying to do right now and where we want to support Commissioner Davis and this incoming administration is to get the conversation switching to what are we going to do about this crime spike? What are we going to do to save kids in both West and East Baltimore from falling, Mark? And I think that, yeah, we need to hold each other accountable, and the FOP will do that, and Commissioner Davis will do that. But I think now that the focus has to switch and we have to begin to talk about what is going on in these streets, I'm concerned because I think there are a lot of young police officers who are leaving. I think there's a lot of police officers on the street who are not engaging the way I engaged many years ago, the way I'm still engaging right now at 49 years old. And I think the only way to do that is to convince these officers that they have the backing of not only Commissioner Davis, but Mayor Pugh, the Baltimore Sun editorial page, folks like you, and the community leaders across the city. And I don't think we're really having that conversation yet.
Well, the question is how do you get to that conversation and what that conversation means? And folks, really do join us here. Clarence, you just hung up. A call back at 410-319-8888. Bob Cherry, former head of the FOP, is with us in the House. And I will say that I've had interviewed Bob numerous times over the bunch of years when he was president of the FOP. And I find you to be a very honorable and serious and straightforward guy. So let me start there. So the question becomes a number of things. I mean, the consent decree outlined some, and I am one of those few people I think who's foolish enough to have read the entire thing from cover to cover. And it outlined a lot of pretty horrendous acts on the part of some officers in this police department, from their treatment of women who were street workers to acts. And if you couple that with the No Boundaries Coalition report, did you read that report that they put out?
No, I didn't see that, Mark.
Well, the No Boundaries put out a report where they, before the consent decree came out, they put out a report, I'm glad to share with you, that where they interviewed over 550 people on the west side of Baltimore in five neighborhoods. And what came out of that report was a pretty damning observation among the most black residents on the west side about not just the arrests, but the verbal, even more than physical, but verbal and physical abuse that people are confronted with every day by the Baltimore City Police. And I've seen it. I mean, I think that's part of the problem. I mean, the kind of authoritarian way that police officers, some police officers, approach this community in our city. And it's very abusive, I mean, and very threatening. I think that that's a problem. So that's one of the reasons we have this consent decree, is to address that. And I think that we can't begin to talk about, you cannot talk about what you just laid out without also addressing that issue.
Right. And, you know, Mark,
they're not disconnected.
Right. They're not disconnected. And the FOP, myself, Commissioner Davis, everyone else in the BPD, none of us are either defending or tolerating officers who, you know, no boundaries and what you're saying, allegedly say, you know, or how they treat certain people in West Baltimore. What I will tell you, though, is that there is a change in that. Our officers are getting better training. One of the things, actually, that I think the mayor should look at is about 4 or 5 years ago, I published the Blueprint for Improved Policing.
I remember all that.
And one of the things, yep. You know, a lot of the things that we talked about in the blueprint, had we implemented many of those things, I don't think we'd be in this position right now with DOJ and the consent decree. One of the things that we talked about was raising the hiring standards of our police, that you require either 2-year college and or military. And I remember at the time, Mark, there was a lot of people in the media that said, oh, Bob, I can't believe you know, that's going to cut back on minority recruitment and so forth, as though, you know, folks in the inner city aren't going to college. And I said to them, I said, well, not only is that not true, I was like, but we wanted to bring back the cadet program where you hire kids out of high school at age 18. You know, you go to Pauley, go to City, recruit some of these kids who live in the city, who are African-American, and you put them through school and you pay for it. And then you get a commitment from them that when they get their either 2 or 4 year degree, that they stay with the BPD for another 5 years and agree to remain living in the city. You know, studies across the country, Mark, have shown that officers coming out of the military or have some sort of college degree tend to get in less trouble. That report was published 5 years ago, and neither Mayor Rawns Blake or Mayor Pugh have taken it serious and have made any efforts to implement something like that program. And I think these are the things that are being missed in the conversation that we're having. The other thing I want to say in terms of the public, particularly in West Baltimore, where I've been since the last May, that's a district that I work in, the Western District. Yeah, you're going to hear a lot of people say, you know, the police treat me like this, the police treat me like that. But look what our officers are up against. In 2016, at this time right now, we had 315 robberies. Right now, year to date, 2017, we have 333. In 2016, at this time, we had 32 non-fatal shootings. Right now, we're at 44 as of today. We had 12 homicides at this time last year. In 2017, we're at 22, including a woman yesterday who was shot driving her car in Northern Parkway. Was she just an innocent person from another state driving across Northern Parkway and gets hit by an Erman bullet? Just last week at Edmondson Avenue and Cary, which is in the Western District, there was a shootout. No one got hit. So, you know, again, you're not going to hear this on the media report, but our office has recovered three different caliber casings from the scene. And the video footage from one of the stores there showed these two kids, two African-American young men, getting out of a vehicle that was parked on Emerson Avenue and then shooting into this carryout. And then the man who was coming out of the carryout pulled out his own gun and shot back. And, Mark, this is why four or five cars were parked at the red light westbound on Emerson Avenue. Luckily, no one was hit. But these are the conversations that, or these are the incidents that are happening across the city that our offices are dealing with every day. And I just think, look, we're going to hold our offices accountable. I already said that our use of force complaints is down. Our police-involved shootings are down. There's more paperwork whenever you use any force already on the street before the consent decree. That's fine. But let's go to Annapolis and let's get the city council engaged in another conversation, which is how do I back the police force that I know I need to get this city back on track so that we can continue to attract businesses, create jobs, and get out of this mess?
So I have a lot I have to ask about what you just said, but let me be in fairness for listeners. Since the time we have left, we have like 22 minutes left here, so let me get the people on the phone, 410-319-8888. We've covered this subject a great deal. It's your time to have your voices heard here at 410-319-8888. Leo, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yes. Good morning, Mark Steiner.
Good morning, Leo Burrows. I'm very well. How are you?
I'm great. And Mr. Bob Cherry, how are you?
Good morning, Mr. Leo. How are you, sir?
Okay. Yeah, I'm profoundly, as a community activist and community organizer, profoundly disappointed in the Baltimore City Police Department. We know you have challenges, but the report that we got in August 10th of 2016, the DOJ report, certainly documented with clarity why we have a problem in our city with the police department. And all I can see has been obstructionism on the part of the Fraternal Order of Police. You mentioned the Minority Recruitment Cadet Program. Well, I haven't heard of an all-out effort on the part of the FOP to bring that to fruition. It was something that should never have gone out of style or out of use in our city, but that wasn't something that you went before the city council to promote. We had an auxiliary police officers group headed up by Colonel Richard Terry, and that was downsized in this city, and the efforts to recruit from within the city among minorities has never been legitimate or real. And finally, when it comes to gun control, I haven't heard the local or national Fraternal Order Police promote national gun control in the way that it should be touted and controlled. You have all the advantages. 1974 Law Enforcement Officers Bill of Rights gives you, the police in Maryland, an advantage that you do not provide the citizenry in an equitable and fair way. So I'm saying you get all of the money, most of the budget of this city, and you do us a disservice by your current leadership. I am very unhappy with your leadership and will hope that you will reform it in a legitimate way and become more responsible.
Right. Mr. Leo, I hear you loud and clear, and let me just say this, sir. Just prior to you getting on, I don't know if you heard this when you were on the phone waiting to get on Mark's show, but I talked about a blueprint for improved policing that the FOP did publish about 5 years ago, calling for a program to help recruit in the side of the city.
But he's saying it's not happening now, though. People are
What I want Leo and your other listeners to understand is the FOP can only do so much. We represent the rank and file, and the fact that we even published something like this was actually unheard of from unions across the city. Usually the unions are looking for better benefits, better pay. We were looking for something that was going to make the BPD better. That's up to now the Baltimore Police Department and City Hall. And Leo, I will let you know this. I did personally meet with President Jack Young and members of the City Council and members of the state delegation. We didn't have an opportunity to meet with the mayor. I did meet with Ryan O'Doherty, who was then the spokesman with the mayor at the time, and I know that some of the other members of the mayor's staff, Stephanie Rollins-Blake, did have that report. It's up to the city leadership, I'm saying, to begin that conversation. And, you know, when you talk about obstructionism, our offices can only do so much. I think, unfortunately, Mark, a lot of people, and I spent a lot of time my last 24 years as a cop, and I knew this when I was a homicide detective on the stand. There's only so much you can say in court when it comes to hearsay. And I think a lot of people, when they call 911, they think that just gives an officer the right to get those drug dealers off the corner, but that's not true. Our officers have to conduct the investigation, and they need good intelligence from the community. So to get, you know, these guns off the street, to get these drug dealers out of our neighborhoods, we're going to need people to become more engaged and be willing to help us put them away.
But I'm going to go right back to the phones here, because next time we're going to have a much longer time with you when you have the time to take as well to be here. And I do appreciate you taking time on our listeners. But I think part of the problem is that people are scared of the police. They don't trust you, which is why they don't cooperate with you. I'm not sitting here being anti-police. As I've said many over and over times, my nephew is a cop. I have friends who are police. Most people in the African American community have family members who are police. This is not an anti-police issue. It's an issue of the police in some ways have gotten way out of control in their abusive behavior with people in the community and not respecting who they are, the way they speak to people. That's one of the reasons you don't have the cooperation of the community. They're as scared of you as they are the thugs in the corner.
Right. So, Mark, so let's continue the conversation then and the dialogue. Our police officers want to be engaged in this discourse, but I think a lot of our officers also feel embattled. They don't feel the support coming from City Hall that's necessary for them to get the job done. And, you know, while I hear everything that you're saying and your listeners, you know, the facts speak for themselves. The use of force complaints are down. Our use of force when it comes to taser and our other weapons that we have are down. Our arrests are down, but crime is up. We need our officers to actually be more engaged, and you're right, in a professional way. You have to watch what you say to people. There are people who tell me all the time that you got officers who come up and say, that's why you shouldn't live in the city. Mark, I live in the city, and I've lived in the city since I got out of college and since I joined the BPD. And there are more officers living today in the city than there were 10 years ago. No one wants to talk about that. But to keep police living in the city, you have to show that you're going to back them. That's all I'm saying. I think that it's disheartening to me as a city resident, as someone who I do consider liberal and progressive, that the conversation we're only having is about these bad apples on the BPD, but not about the good officers out there who are trying to take the bad guys off the street. How do you deal with those numbers, Mark, that I just read you? Are you concerned where you live in Northwest Baltimore that these numbers are out of control and that this is not a good sign for this city?
I think anybody who lives in communities where the shootings are taking place and robberies are taking place are deeply concerned. Nobody wants to live like that.
Last night, Mark, I went down to see a friend of mine. Him and his wife asked me to come down and a few other friends. Their son just got back from Paris Island. And so, you know, they're obviously excited. He's a Marine. They're excited that he's back. They also live in the city. And they live right down by the Ivy Hotel that just opened up at Calvert and Bell.
Calvert, right.
Well, when I pulled up, they thought I was out talking to the police because just moments before I pulled up to go in and say hello to them, there was someone robbed right across the street in the alley across from the Ivy Hotel. This is the kind of stuff that's happening that's not being reported, that the conversation's not taking place, or at least the urgency of Mayor Pugh is not happening. When was the last, the mayor has been in office for almost 2 months now. When was the last time you heard her or Anthony McCarthy really address this crime spike, other than the comments she made in relation to what Gene Ryan, the FOP, said with the shortage in patrol? Has anyone really had a serious conversation about where we're going with the crime numbers?
So I think let's have that conversation. But let me get the phones here. As I promise, a lot of people calling in at 410-319-8888. Try to get to as many as you can in the next 50 minutes we have. Is it Calonet? And line 3, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yes, thank you. How are you doing, sir?
Good morning.
Morning. I just briefly wanted to say, you know, the Army doesn't shoot the men in its own platoon. So we have to consider the community as well as the police. There's nothing that the community is doing. I mean, the police is out there doing what they do. Sure, there are some challenges. But the community at large is not doing anything. I mean, you look at these women that went out to Washington and, you know, by the thousands. Why aren't we organizing as men in our communities to combat this situation in our communities? Men need to stand up. And I just want to say that it's a necessity that men show boys what men look like. It's that time that we stand up as men across the board. Mark, I want to thank you for doing what you did at the end of the year as you read the victims of violence last year.
Mm-hmm.
I really appreciate it. I thank you because each life had value, and I just thank you so much for doing that. It meant a lot to me, and I hope you gentlemen have a good day.
Thank you, Colleen.
Thank you, Colleen.
Let me go back to the phones here, and it meant a lot to me to read those names, too. It took a long time to read them, but their names need to be heard, as did their ages. 410-319-8888. Bernard, you're on the air. Welcome. Good morning, Bernard.
Yes, I was when I called in your show, or David Brown's show,
But you're here now, so go right ahead.
Okay. My thing is what the gentleman, the guest, said. He's trying to justify one bad behavior with another one. We're talking about the police brutality. Sure, as a 79-year-old black man, I see what's going on, and as a 79-year-old black man, I'm embarrassed for the things that happen in our city that the black youngster involved in. But you can't lock them up and then beat them up at the same time. That's what's been going on. I want them locked up. I want them on the street. If the police shooting is justifiable, I won't call all the police accountable for that. You know, we have some bad apples out here, the people that look like me. But they're trying to justify, you know, the high crime rate and then to say that those rates are to justify the police bad behavior. So one it doesn't justify the other. And as a 79-year-old black African-American, I know it's bad out here. But I want them locked up. But I don't want them, you know, let the police be the judge and the jury, lock them up, then have them go to court.
Right. And, you know, Mr. Bernard, first of all, you know, we need people like you on our side. You know, you mentioned you're 70, 80-something. You have a lot of experience that myself... Well, Mark, you might have it. I don't know how old you are, Mark. I think I saw that in the papers, but I won't mention that. Mr. Bernard, you know, you're right. I'm not trying to justify, and at no time will myself, Commissioner Davis, anyone in the BPD, justify the actions of bad officers. All I'm trying to say now on Mark's show, and the reason why I hit him up, is that I'm concerned because of people like you that do need good police out there to take these bad guys off the street. And I'm concerned that the crime that we're seeing now in Baltimore City is actually stretching beyond areas of West Baltimore. And it's not just the violent crime. You know, we're talking burglaries, larceny from autos. It's happening all over the city. And all I'm trying to say is that while we have to hold our police accountable, I just wish that the mayor and our state delegation in Annapolis would have a little bit more discussion on not only how do we build that relationship between police and community, because we hear that all the time, but let's talk about the responsibility in the community to come forward, work with us to make this a safer city. We owe it to you, Bernard, and we owe it to the young kids who are just entering elementary school and want a life in this city.
So, I mean, what about some of the arguments that the people have made that I mean, you see the mayor just said we're going to commit $1 million, put more police officers on the street. We had officers on here, former officers who now run the Johns Hopkins Leadership Program and others, saying the state police, what they did was they looked inside and did the internal analysis. Another one just came out that said if you are a badge and a gun, you don't need to be behind a desk. You need to be in the street. And no one's really ever done an audit of the police department.
No.
A serious audit of where money's being spent, how it's being spent, on what, on whom, who's sitting behind a desk with a badge and a gun as opposed to being in a community doing work. I mean, don't you think that has to happen? Yeah,
Mark, it does. The department knows where all our offices are, and I'll commend the commissioner for putting 100 more offices back on the street following Gene Ryan, and what the FOP had published was a shortage in patrol. You know, you're talking to someone who spent 9 years as a homicide detective, and I spent time in violent crime, so I did my time in plainclothes. But I will tell you and your listeners now, I think the only way out of this crime fight, short of targeting the gun offenders, is to put almost everyone, and I'm talking about almost all of the specialized units, back in uniform and back on the street. You know, we're in a crisis right now, and the only way to deal with it is for us to stabilize what we have and then rebuild some of those specialized units. Now, I'm not talking about the sex offense unit or homicide, but I do think there's a lot of officers out there, particularly the younger ones, who don't yet have the experience testifying in court, who don't have the experience dealing with the public, and at a time where the crime is being spiked, we need more uniforms, more boots on the ground. A lot of these robberies and shootings will be prevented just by the mere presence of officers roaming the streets more than less. And right now, we don't have those numbers. In terms of the mayor, real quick, Martin, let me make this. I'm not trying to jump on her all morning, whatever, but I know where she's getting a lot of her advice. The problem with the mayor, you know, unfreezing those numbers, okay, that's all well and good. But it takes, you know, anywhere from 8 to 12 months to recruit and then train these officers and get them out on the street. We need something immediate. And I think these are some of the things that, you know, we need to look at. And it's a smokescreen to talk about our patrol schedule. It's a smokescreen to talk about, you know, how we're going to craft a civilian review board in Annapolis. We need to talk about crime right now, how to deploy our officers, and look at how they did it in New York and Boston, where it worked.
So I do want to get – I'm sorry about we truncated this so much, though. I really wanted to get into this in a deeper way because we did not talk about the civilian review board or the trial board and civilians being on both of those and the power they should or should not have. But let me get a call in here and see what we can do. Let's go to Tori. You're on the air. Line 3. Welcome. Tori, good morning. You there?
Yes. I'm Tori. I'm sorry. I was listening to the radio.
That's all right. It's okay. Go ahead.
At the same time. What I wanted to say is very simple, and it's not something that you hear every day when it comes to police brutality and police departments. Two points. One, the problems with the police department don't have anything to do with the mayor, the governor, or whoever gets elected in office. All the problems with the police department begin and start with the police department. They begin and end with administration and policy within the police department. What I mean by that is, when we have police officers that brutalize the people in our community, it's not an accident, it's not a mistake, and it's generally not the first time it's happened. By the time a news camera gets involved, that officer has already done it several times. That's not my opinion. That's what the people and the citizens of Baltimore City know for sure. That's why when it came to any situation where a police officer is being tried for police misconduct in the city, the people already know he's going to get off. That's one point. The other point is police cannot serve the interest of the people if the people don't trust them. The people don't trust the police department because, quite frankly, the police department consistently and totally show disrespect by telling us 1 + 1 = 1,000,000 when we know 1 + 1 = 2. When you tell us that this is an isolated incident or this police officer just did it this time, we know that that officer has been involved with police brutality many times. But the police, not only in Baltimore but across the country, have a policy of protecting their own.
Okay, so Tori,
as nice as that sounds, the problem is you're supposed to be protecting the people.
I'm only interrupting, Tori, because we don't have a lot of time left. I want to give Bob a chance to respond. So you want to finish that thought real fast? Sorry. Tori, don't hang up on him. I just wanted to...
They hang up on Tori?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Tori. I didn't mean to hang up on you.
Yeah. I know you weren't able to wrap that up, Tori, but you started off by saying that the problems start and end with the police department. We agree with you. And I think that's why in the beginning of the show I was pointing out some numbers, Mark, where there is, you know, multiple layers of accountability now in place in the Baltimore Police Department to hold officers accountable. And, you know, the only thing I would say also, Tori, is in terms of the officers, the bad apples out there, whatever, you know, yeah, it's incumbent upon all of us to make sure, and I'm talking about police right now, to hold the other cops accountable who aren't doing their part. We are doing that. I think, you know, the Baltimore Police Department terminates more officers, and this may not be a good thing. People will say, well, then you proved my point, Bob. But our police department terminates more officers, Mark, than any other police department in the state of Maryland. So it's not like everyone that goes before a trial board right now gets away with it. And I still think, Mark, that there are ways to recruit better officers, more qualified officers to work these streets. All I'm saying is that it isn't an easy job. And when you have that many guns out there on the street and this much violence, you are going to have instances where the officers have to engage. They're going to end up using force because we have people out here in the streets of Baltimore, Mark, that don't care that you're a cop, don't care that you're working hard, you know, keeping your listeners informed. They don't care about your students over here behind you working the production desk. They'll rob you. They'll shoot you. That's all I'm saying.
We know there are bad actors out here.
Right.
We know there's a lot. We would not have the robbery rate or the murder rate that we have in the city. And we know a lot of the murder rate has to do with retaliation for other shootings that happen. We know all that's true. But I think that the question that Tori was going to, and Tori, sorry we hung up on you, but which is why people want to have civilians, a stronger civilian review board that really has teeth, that's not allowed by the Bill of Rights at the moment, the Office of Bill of Rights, and to have civilians on the trial boards. So that and that doesn't seem to me to be an unreasonable question. And a reasonable response to the civilians should control the police, not the other way around.
I think the citizens do control the police. The citizens elect the mayor, Mark. The mayor appoints the police commissioner, and the commissioner appoints his command staff to lead the officers on the street. The mayor at any time can work with the FOP and the BPD to increase hiring in the city, maybe look at the plan that we had there in our blueprint. I think, you know, again, I'm just surprised at a lot of, you know, and I don't know if you're hearing it either. Use of force and complaints filed by the citizens in this city are down, Mark.
They are down,
50%.
But they're still happening every day.
They're going to still
happen. Every day.
You know what? Unfortunately, they're going to still happen. You're still going to have wonderful surgeons at Johns Hopkins, and you're still going to get attorneys and patients out there who are going to file.
But don't you see a direct correlation between why people don't trust the police and in terms of their...
You know, I do. I think some of that is the reason why the distrust is there. But you know where else I think the distrust comes from? Is a story I told you last night about my friend and his son coming back from Paris Island and them getting upset that there's a robbery across the street from where they live, across from a hotel that just opened up, that's, by the way, putting jobs in the city, and that the police aren't engaged in that. You don't think, Mark, that I have my own issues with the BPD? I live in the city. I don't, you know, I mean, maybe some of the offices in the district that I live in know I live there, but not all of them. And so I'm going to judge them the way I want to be judged myself. And I don't see them as often as I should or I would like to. I know my neighbors don't. And we talk about that. So, you know, the police themselves, we get that we have to do a better job. All I'm saying is that I think, the conversation in this city, it's disheartening to hear that it continues to remain focused on what our officers are either doing right or wrong at a time when our use of force and our complaints are down. And meanwhile, crime is going up, and we continue to have the same discussion about trust, transparency, the community relationship. We're not denying any of that. But we also have to start having another serious conversation about, are we going to back good officers who go out there and engage and get the job done so we can make this a safer city for you and your wife?
This has been a great comment. Bob, I, first of all, let me thank you for reaching out to us. And I hope that we can find time in your schedule on patrol to come back in for an entire hour just to sit with us.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
One-on-one. I think this is an open conversation. Our listeners, we have a lot of people calling in. I'm sorry we couldn't get to all the calls today. We only had like 35 minutes today, but the next time we'll ask Bob Cherry to come back home for an hour. He's now not a national trustee with the Baltimore, with the Fraternal Order of Police nationally. He is on the street as a sergeant for the last 2.25 years and former president of the Baltimore's Fraternal Order of Police here in the city, which is how we met. Bob, thanks for being in the studio.
No, thank you, Mark.
And folks, thank you all for calling in and being part of the show today. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our senior producer is Mark Gunnery. Our producer is Imani Spence. Our research producer is Calvin Perry. Our production assistant is Nadia Ramlagan. Our engineer is Andrea Melton. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. You can send me your thoughts about today's program to talk@steinershow.org, to podcast this show, share it with your friends, visit us on the web at steinershow.org, or listen to us via your favorite podcasting app. And for your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the place of the 4-0 birthday bash taking place this Saturday night, January 28th. Go to WEA.org for more information. I'm Mark Steiner. Stay involved. Take care.